VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, this is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, the first semi-final at Euro 2020 is upon us. Can Spain roll back the years to pass their way into the final? Or will Italian fortitude deliver them into the showpiece event? This is the Game Euro 2020. I'm Hugh Wisencroft, and joining me to look ahead, Tom Roddy, Gregor Robertson. How are you? And firstly, how are you feeling about the semi-finals and final now? Because, you know, it's squeaky bum time, as Sir Alex would say, Gregor.
I'm very much looking forward to the two semi-finals. They're both quite hard to call. There is a favourite in both, I think, but it would not be a surprise to see the other team go through. So I think, you know, we're quite evenly balanced. And I think it would be fair to say, Spain have kind of peaked and troughs, but four of the best teams in the competition, definitely. And it doesn't always work out that way. You know, we've seen some pretty dour teams succeed in this competition in the past, and nations like Greece kind of plunder their way to the trophy. But I think all these teams, certainly in spells, have been very entertaining to watch.
Looking forward to them, Tom?
Yeah, I am, a lot. And there's a part of me as well which feels quite sad, actually, that we've got three games left, and yeah. It's been such a good tournament, and also just been reminded this summer of the kind of the charm of international football after a year in which we've had sort of the greed of club football and inequality of club football. That's not involved. There feels like a purity in international football. So I'm a little bit sad it's coming to an end.
You're right. It has been a great competition, and there is a romance that goes along with international football. Maybe that's what you were alluding to. Let's break down what will firstly be a huge game. Of course, all the games left at Wembley, but the first semi-final between the Italians and the Spanish. We'll also, by the way, get the latest from the England camp ahead of their semi-final against Denmark a little bit later on. But I wanted to break this down into talking points. We'll talk about the two managers a little bit later on. We'll even talk about defences versus attacks, the two midfields as well, and what Wembley represents in terms of how the outcome of this game might be. But I firstly wanted to ask you both what you think, holistically, generally, the strengths and weaknesses of these two sides are. What do you think, Gregor?
I think there's been a bit of a shift, certainly because Italy have changed the way they play so markedly. You know, it used to be this was a bit of a culture clash, these two nations going head to head. I think I read some of their played 37 times and won 11 each. They were, you know, the two giant nations of football. But they used to be, you know, the Italians were defensively solid, quick counter-attacks, and the Spanish dominating possession. There are now quite a lot of parallels. I would say that, you know, the midfield battle is going to be key. They've both got huge talent in midfield. And I would say both teams don't have an out-and-out elite striker. So, you know, I'd say there's some parallels between teams. Italy are playing with a little bit more dynamism. Spain are kind of...
That's a throwback on the Morata praise from the other day, Gregor.
It was more hope than the reality of the situation. It's true. I think, you know, as good as Italy were against Belgium, I thought Ciro Immobile was really pretty poor. So that is at least one kind of weak point, if you can call it that. And I think as we've gone over, that is something you could say of Spain as well. But both teams are, you know, want to dominate, want to play through midfield. I just think Italy have got that little bit more dynamism. And as I said before, Emerson will be coming in for Spinazzola, a huge loss. And it's going to be interesting to see whether Insigne will be as dangerous, because the way that they worked together and rotated on down the left-hand flank has been one of the standout kind of features of the tournament, I would say. So I'd say there's some parallels between the teams. I just think Italy have that little bit more edge and dynamism about them.
What do you think, Tom, about the strengths and weaknesses of the two sides?
Yeah, I can only really echo what Gregor said in terms of the way Italy have evolved into a much more similar side to Spain. But also one thing I think Gregor touched on, the idea of Italy's dynamism. And I think Jorginho actually was speaking this week about that. And kind of hit the nail on the head, really, when he said they're the team who have a philosophy, and if a player is removed from that and another one comes in, then it doesn't really change. Now, I don't think that will be the case with Spinazzola. He's going to be a big, big miss for them. And of course, Emerson, I mean, he's played. He made two Premier League appearances this season, so it's not quite, it's far from like for like. But when I look at the four teams remaining in this tournament, I think Italy are the team that have that kind of philosophy that doesn't change whoever is involved. And of course that record of 32 games unbeaten is really no surprise at all. Even though they have evolved and they're not just that kind of defensively solid unit with a midfield which, let's be honest, has actually been sort of inspired and admired by Spain, because, you know, Jorginho, before he moved to Chelsea, it was Guardiola who was trying to get him to City. But they still have that in Bonucci and Chiellini. They still have that strength and that absolute passion for defending. I mean, you saw in the Belgium game the celebrations of the two. I think it was when Lukaku hit the post and had that miss. The celebrations that they had. I'll miss that when they retire, because you don't see that elsewhere. It's really quite refreshing that they do that. So they still have that passion. And I think it was Chiellini who said not so long ago that the reason there aren't so many great defenders coming through is because of this, of the kind of trend of players needing to be midfielders. And that was Spain. That was because of Spain doing what they did 10 years ago. This trend of having a team, I mean, the 2012 final, when Spain absolutely wiped the floor with Italy, they played with, I think, six midfielders. So it's probably more, really, probably 11. But it's that change, but Italy have both now. They still have the strength in defence and that dynamism and quality from midfield.
And just for the record, listeners, we haven't added the sirens in just because Tom's hot take there was so bad that we want him carted off to jail. It just lives in a pretty unruly area. So apologies for that. We'll keep going. There might be more, so we'll warn you about it now. Look, I wanted to talk about these two managers. Before we get to the details you've alluded to and in terms of how the game might go and some of the key players, I think the two managers, Roberto Mancini and Luis Enrique, are so intriguing in terms of their approach in this competition. I read Cesar Azpilicueta of Spain saying that Enrique just wants them to be aggressive. It's all about the high level of intensity. That's how he wants them to play. That's what's brought them this far. But then you think about Roberto Mancini's Italy, and as you've already alluded to, Tom, you know, in many ways, that's what they have at the moment, that level of tenacity and that endeavour that has been marked, I think, in Italian sides of the past. He's managed to rediscover that, I think, Mancini. But really, my question on the two of them is which coach is ready to deal with this situation better? Because neither coach has really been at this stage in a major competition. Gregor, I'll start with you on this one. Enrique or Mancini?
They're both hugely experienced coaches and managers. So, you know, I don't think this is going to be a daunting stage for them. I think you just got to look at the, you know, who's going to have the most confidence in their team. And I think Spain, in fairness, Enrique's been pretty bullish about, you know, when it's been put to him about the kind of the wobbly performances that they've had, or, you know, the failure to break down Sweden. And then they had two games where they scored five goals and then, you know, kind of stumbled through in the last round. That's a bit harsh. They've created plenty of opportunities, but they've just not always fired. They've taken some criticism, I think, but he's been pretty bullish about it all, and I think that kind of sums him up. So players talk about the intensity. I'm not necessarily sure we've seen that in their play all the time. That's not the first word that would jump to mind when you've watched Spain in this competition, would you agree? I can see that in his character and his personality. I can see him trying to get that across to the players, but I don't think it's always really been evident in their play. Italy, on the other hand, I mean, I said it before, Mancini's kind of, every decision he's made has come off. I think went to throw on Chiesa, then choosing to give him a start, you know, just to stretch the play a little bit and open up a bit of a channel for Barella to kind of to bomb into. You know, I think they're very cohesive team Italy, and they just look very comfortable in the shape and the way they're being asked to play. I don't want to repeat myself too much, but Spinazzola has been such a huge part of that. It will be interesting. You know, Emerson's a great understudy. Let's be honest. I think he's still a quality left back, so there's no issue there. But he was just such an important feature of their play. It's going to be interesting to see how they adapt.
I think one of the interesting things about Spain is Luis Enrique as a character, maybe trying to meld the old Spain, the Spain that had loads of technically good players but never quite reached the level, the Spanish teams that he played in, with the Spains that used to play teams off the park that won a World Cup and two European championships. And of course, this generation of players, having watched very closely those teams, most of them, you know, it's almost like the nation wants to play like they did under Del Bosque, but he's trying to make them remember that it is still about winning games. And I think Roberto Mancini in Italy, they just have that tradition where it's just about winning. It doesn't really matter how you do it. And I think maybe that will take them a little bit further in terms of approach as well, because I still feel like, you know, the Pedris of this world that are in the team, you know, can't forget Sergio Busquets, you know, was one of the main players in those teams. You know, he doesn't want to change the style. He doesn't want it to become more aggressive. They've got some way towards what Luis Enrique wants, which is some sort of halfway house. I just don't think they've perfected it yet. Tom, back to my original question, though. Which coach do you think will handle the semi-final better, Mancini or Enrique?
I think possibly Mancini, but I don't think it's necessarily about the coaches, to be honest, in this individual game. I think it's about the coaches and the players and the system they've had for the past 12 months or so, the preparation coming into this tournament in exactly the same way as England. It's about how they've come into this tournament, because it's not, you know, games are decided on a day, but a performance at a tournament, a lot of it is about the preparation for it. And I think when I look at Spain, they seem like a side, they don't seem ready for this to me. They don't seem like they are complete, this sort of resurrection of that side, the recreation of that side of 10 years ago. It doesn't look quite complete. They'll now go on and win it, won't they? Whereas Italy feel like a complete side, like this has been coming for a little while, and that momentum is seen in the record breaking run. And I just think Mancini has, you look at both these coaches, and if you could see both of them, if Mancini hadn't worked in the Premier League, you could see both of them coming to the Premier League at some point.
You know, I think it's quite refreshing, though, is that there'll be no question marks about, you know, are they going to line up to kind of counter one another? Are they going to change system? Are they going to do this and that? They will both go out there and they will play the way that they play, and they'll try and impose their philosophy, for want of a better word, their style on the opposition. And that could make for a really exciting game.
Well, it's interesting. These two managers, very strong characters. We'll see, Gregor, if they play exactly how you expect them to. And we'll talk about the details of the game a little bit later on. But Luis Enrique, the Spain boss, has just been speaking to the media. So it's a good time to bring in Paul Hurst of The Times, who's been following Spain throughout the competition. Paul, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well.
And it's been an interesting press conference from Luis Enrique of Spain. Tell us why.
He was asked how he plans to kind of prepare his players for this huge game, this game that, you know, no one really expected Spain to get this far, did they? And he said that he will put it in the capable hands of his psychologist, Joaquin Valdez, who has kind of basically followed him throughout his career, whether it be, you know, Barcelona, Celta Vigo, Roma, and now with the Spanish national team. And he says it'll be up to Valdez to try and calm the players down, because there is a tendency in these games, he said, for for players to get a little overexcited, which I just think is quite an interesting kind of insight into how Spain operate. I think as I said earlier, I don't think anyone expected them to get this far. So I think they're kind of willing to use any kind of extra help that they can get. And Valdez just seems to be such an interesting kind of character. He was a former professional judo or judoka, I think that's how you pronounce it, a former mm-hmm. professional judo person, and he used to be a ski teacher as well, so this guy's he's been around, he studied psychology, started at Sporting Gijón, and then has been with Luis Enrique ever since. So you sort of see him knocking around all the Spain videos in the training sessions and the press conferences as well. He's a bit like his shadow, really. And he advises Luis Enrique on the words to use, the kind of the phrases to use to, in public, in the press conferences and with the players as well. So he's sort of like his right-hand man, and he's going to, place a bit of responsibility on his shoulders when it comes to the team talk.
I've got to say, just looking at Luis Enrique on the touchline, whether Valdez might be more for him than his players, because it does sometimes transmit from the manager to his team. He doesn't really seem like the sort that's always telling them to calm down. He's almost jumping out of the dugout half the time.
I know, I've not got much hair left, but what I do have left, I end up pulling out just looking at Luis Enrique, because he is such a frantic person. He's very similar to Pep Guardiola in that respect, very animated, very, very passionate. And I know what you mean. He does seem to kind of not lose his cool, but he's very kind of animated on the touchline. But, I suppose that's kind of shows his passion, passion for the game. And, he's very much, he's a great believer in this team. I remember him saying earlier in the tournament that he's never been with a greater group of players. And when you consider, that he managed the likes of Lionel Messi, etc., with Barcelona, that's pretty big claim to make.
Let's ask you this from the Spanish perspective. Do you think they have what it takes to beat Italy tomorrow? Because I get the feeling that the rest of us feel like Italy are a firm favourites.
I tend to agree with you. I would be surprised if Spain won. But I've watched, obviously covered all their games this tournament, and it seems bizarre considering that they scored 10 goals in two games. But sometimes I just think, I don't see where the goals are coming from. I just look at Alvaro Morata sometimes and think, he just takes one touch too many and he lacks a bit of confidence. And they seem to take a lot of chances before they score a goal. And with Italy, you're just not going to get those chances, are you? They're not going to give you, 12, 15 shots on goal. It's going to be very restricted. And Spain, I just think, need to be that little bit sharper in front of goal if they're going to stand any chance. And also, the midfield up until now has had quite an easy ride in terms of, being pressed, etc. I just think that the way the energy that the Italians have, I just think that the likes of Pedri and Busquets and Koke will come under more pressure than they have done earlier in this tournament. So that's something that they're not used to.
We'll talk about those different areas of the pitch in a few moments. But Paul Hurst, thank you for joining us to discuss Spain on the Game podcast. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
So Paul thinks the pressure is going to come on the Spanish midfield. Let's break the game down then into the two penalty areas and the centre circle with Tom Roddy and Gregor Robertson. Let's start, gentlemen, with Spanish attack versus Italian defence. Gregor, how do you see that playing out?
Well, I think probably the most impressive player has been Ferran Torres, and Emerson coming in. He's, as I say, I think he's a good understudy, and we've seen that he's a good player, but I think that could be one area of weakness for Italy. As I say, I think the fact that both really are struggling for an out and out number nine who is in elite level and really thrived in this competition. I think Chiellini and Bonucci will probably have harder days at the office. I don't want to speak too soon there, but I also think Lorenzo at right back. He stuck kind of manfully at it against Doku, against Belgium. But I think he's just not quite got the turn of pace perhaps, and he can perhaps be got at as well. So, I would probably say if England were to get to the final as well, that would be an area. If you imagine Raheem Sterling against against Lorenzo. I think Raheem Sterling could have a good day against him. So Italy have been outstanding defensively on the whole. There's just been the occasional, because they play quite a high line, because they press, if they play in a high line and they've got two guys in the mid-30s, we saw even in the early throws of the game against Belgium, that was a tactic. They tried to spring Lukaku several times in behind, and Spain have the pace up front to take advantage of that. But, you know, on the whole, they've coped pretty well with that. And as we saw, the way they saw the game out, if they need to, they can sit in a low block and good luck breaking them down. So I would say Italy coming out on top there.
Tom, do you think these Spanish wide players in particular, like Gregor says, can get the best of the Italians? You know, I think that could be one way of doing it. I know that Lukaku was pretty quiet in the Belgium game against these Italian defenders. They relished taking him on, but there is no real standout number nine, as Gregor's pointed out, for Spain for them to worry about. But it's more the movement and the players running from midfield that would be the big concern.
Yeah, it's one way and probably the only way, because you can't see Morata having too much joy in this game. I mean, you've got to remember this could be an opportunity for Morata in a way, his mindset heading into this game, because he obviously was teammates with Bonucci and Chiellini at Juventus, and I believe they used to have a go at him because of the way he plays, because he's a little bit fragile, and they know his quality and the potential he had and still has in games, and didn't sort of live up to that. So they used to sort of have a go at him for it in training. So you could see that in two ways. Either Morata looks at this game and thinks, I'm coming up against two of the fiercest defenders who always used to get the better of me in training. Or he sees it as, they used to have a go at me, and this is my opportunity to show them that I am living up to that potential I've got. I think it's going to be the former, and it's really tricky for him. So, and I think Luis Enrique will recognise that as well, and I think he'll see, you know, it's fallen into their hands a little bit, that their strongest area with Ferran Torres is coming up against Emerson, who is a very good defender. He's at Chelsea. He was always the better defender out of him and Marcus Alonso. But he's also not got much game time. So there's that lack of sharpness there that they can capitalise on.
If it was me, I've got to say, I'd probably start Moreno over Morata. He was getting into the right spots. Listen, neither of them has been great in front of goal, so it's really much of a muchness. But there was something about the positions that Moreno was taking up that were just... they were just the more classic number nine position. I think the players, his teammates, were a little bit more comfortable when he was on the pitch. And I think there was more out of the other players around him when he was on the pitch. But I know it centres around Morata slightly more when he's on. Gregor, who would you start quickly?
He's stuck by Morata, hasn't he, so far? It's just, you know, although it was a surprise. I think he came off after 53 minutes in the last game.
So. He clearly wants to try something else out. When he took him off, you thought, right, he's giving Moreno a chance here. You know, he wants to see what he's got.
I agree with what you're saying. He had three golden opportunities, particularly the one at near post. You know, you're right, he did have, his movement looked pretty good. It's just that final, you know, application. So I wouldn't be surprised if he starts Moreno in this one, but we'll see.
Right, onto the midfields. This is the area that I honestly cannot wait to see how they match up. Busquets, Koke and Pedri, probably against Verratti, Jorginho and Barella. You know, two of the best midfields so far. Great to watch. Goals, tackles, they've had pretty much everything. Where do you see this one going? Gregor, I'll start with you again.
Well, this is the, you know, the biggest draw, I think, of this game, because they're all such exquisite technicians, basically. We've seen Pedri play some, you know, his vision, he's kind of, he always looks to play forward as well, and he takes risks. So he's been really good to watch. I mean, he's obviously had a breakthrough season at Barcelona, but it's the first time I've seen him on a kind of, you know, consecutive basis. So the thing is, they both have a player in Busquets and Jorginho who really like to control they aim to control the tempo of the game. And for me, Jorginho has been the more impressive in this competition. And the kind of dynamic that Italy have with, you know, for, since and they've also have an embarrassment of riches. Is that look, Locatelli had a great start to the competition, and you know there were question marks. Do you bring Verratti back in? But Verratti has been, he's just got that extra. Very few players take as many touches, I think, as Verratti. He's always taken. It feels like you're taking too many touches. But he draws an opponent in, and then he creates space for someone, and he's always great at kind of turning away from them and popping the ball off. He's a wonderful player to watch. And you know, as I say, Barella's got the legs. I think that's the one thing that he has that maybe the Spanish midfield don't. Koke is playing a little bit of a different role than he does for Atletico Madrid in terms of kind of he's the one who's got to try and get into the box, I think. But Barella has been really, really dynamic and impressed me a lot in this tournament.
Who edges it?
I think I'm going for Italy again. They've been the most impressive trio. Spain have been, you know, the way that they've played midfield and the rotations and stuff have been great. But I also think part of it's to do with who's around them. And the kind of, as I say again, the kind of cohesion of the team, and Italy edge it in that way. They seem to get more bodies forward quickly. And when you're a midfielder and you're looking up and you're seeing that, then it makes your job a lot easier.
Tom?
I think when you look at Spain and you see, you remember that first game of the tournament and how much they've improved since that in midfield because of Busquets coming in, it's allowed Pedri to get so much further forward. And Gregor's entirely right about Koke. I mean, he needs to get into the box for Spain. And you see, I kind of touched on it earlier, you see the influence of Spanish football on Italy, really, because Verratti is just such a special player. But Jorginho, zoning in even more into this midfield, I think the key people will probably be Busquets and Jorginho because they play in such a similar way. They're sort of the leaders out there as well. I think Jorginho, I believe, is nicknamed Radio Jorginho by the Italian teammates, which isn't the most... most creative nickname I've heard before, but
yeah, I've heard better.
Yes, yeah. I've, but the point is that he's that kind. It's just because he doesn't stop talking. He's just constantly giving instructions, and you see as well. Whenever Thomas Tuchel, always in the big games, always picked Jorginho, as I mentioned earlier, Guardiola wanted him at Manchester City. He's not the player like Busquets. He's not the player in the generation before then who got plaudits for what they did. He's not the YouTube footballer. Neither of them are. But they are so effective to those teams. And they're not up against each other. But I think whoever performs best out of the two of them could be a key indicator in who wins this game.
And then on to our final third, the Italian forwards against the Spanish defence. I think I know who wins this one as well, Gregor.
Yeah, I mean, I said there's a lot of parallels between these two teams, but I would also, obviously, the glaring difference is who they both have in central defence. In fairness, you know, Laporte and Pau Torres, who's coming for Garcia, they did okay apart from when they basically ran into each other to gift the opposition a goal in the last round. So I think that is a weakness for Spain. But they have Azpilicueta, who is a leader and one of the most reliable players in the Premier League for many years now, and Jordi Alba, who's been an outstanding left back for many years. But I just think Italy, with the number of bodies they get forward, as I said. I wouldn't highlight 1v1 battles here. Insigne, perhaps against Azpilicueta, but he, you know, because he drives inside so often, but are you going to see Emerson overlap to quite the same extent and try and occupy Azpilicueta so that Insigne has space to drive inside, as we saw for the second goal against Belgium? I'm not sure if that, you know, there's going to be the same dynamic there. So I would still say that Italy are going to come out top, but that's not just because they have Ciro Immobile. It's not because they have Insigne. That's not because Chiesa is, you know, full of running and so dynamic. I think it's just because the speed with which they get bodies forward is going to be too much for Spain.
So there's no chance, Tom, because I still think there might be a small surprise from Luis Enrique and maybe a three at the back if he's genuinely worried about the opposition. Try and spoil it, take it to extra time, nick it 1-0. You know, it's not tiki-taka, but it's a competition.
It is, but I think, and I think that Spain fans would be pleased, very pleased, over the moon, in fact, for this team to have got to a final, to have got to a semi-final, in fact. But there's also, I also think there's a similarity between Brazil and Spain in that there is a way Spain are expected to play now to succeed. And so I don't think they're going to play for extra time and just, as they have done in the last few games, just getting over the line. The thing is also they've only had two clean sheets in this whole tournament, and that doesn't reek of a team that's going to win it. I think Chiesa from the right could be very dangerous. He's grown throughout this tournament. Insigne, as Gregor said, has been absolutely excellent, but is up against an impressive and experienced, but also probably almost definitely tired Azpilicueta. And also Immobile, I mean, he's been given, he has dropped off in this tournament, throughout this tournament from the beginning, but Mancini has given him his backing. And, it, you know, I don't know whether that will have an effect on tomorrow, but he will go into that game with so much more confidence than him saying nothing. It was this similar thing with Kane and Southgate. You know, he came out, he said, I'm not dropping him. He's my striker. He is the best striker we've got and one of the best strikers in Europe. And that will have an impact on Immobile's mindset going into a game against a defence which has been far from impressive.
We'll obviously need to see if Immobile has recovered from that horrible injury he suffered in the penalty box.
I think the late fitness test he will pass. I just get that feeling. I don't know about you.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
we could spend a whole podcast just analysing that video. That was just excellent.
I mean, Gregor and I don't know about you, Tom, but we're purists. If it's 1-0 and we have another 15 minutes at the end of the game of S-housery, then I think we'll both be pretty happy with it. There is an art to it, and only the Italians do it as well as anyone else.
We found out early I'm a romantic, not a purist. Remember, so.
Before we hear from the England camp ahead of their big semi-final against Denmark, I did want to talk about Wembley. Of course, I'm from Wembley, but I'm not a big fan of the size of the pitch at Wembley, which for me rarely produces good games. They're either sort of, you know, tight, you know, one team very narrow, or a team tries to counterattack and wears themselves into the ground. Maybe one side's really good on the ball in terms of possession and that wears out their opponents. You know, there's always, for me, a factor that the pitch plays that maybe it shouldn't. Italy have already been there against Austria, but of course, that was probably their worst performance of the competition so far. So do you think Wembley will factor in, Tom, to the result here?
Yeah, it could do. I think you made a really interesting point there. It is a massive pitch. You feel it. You feel it when you're at the stadium, and you also feel it possibly even more when you watch the game on TV because of the camera angle. And it is a huge pitch, and you just think in a semi-final, not wanting to leave open the spaces that can be capitalised on, you maybe end up going for caution over playing with a freedom. I hope you're wrong, Hugh. I hope that is wrong. I hope they do both go for it tomorrow. The one thing as well, which isn't to do necessarily with Wembley, but is a little bit for tomorrow, is what the managers have been touching on, that this is a final with you know, thousands of fans there, and not many of them are going to be Italian, not many of them are going to be Spanish. And a similar thing happened to the game in Munich the other day, where you're watching this huge match and the stands are just sparse with fans, and it feels a little bit underwhelming, really. It's a shame.
Well, there's a good nugget by Bill Edgar in his column in the paper today. There's been 41 goals in the group stages, which is the most since 1970. But Wembley, throughout the tournament, has had 1.4 goals per game, which is the fewest any venue in the competition. So we all have to hope that changes. And it does kind of possibly back up your point. It's a, you know, as you say, it's a, they've not all been the, you know, the Germany game was very, very entertaining, but it is a big expanse. You know, I don't want to drop a clanger here, but I've played there, and it's a big old place.
Times Journalist charity match, was it?
No, it might as well have been. It was a National League playoff final. Not quite the Euros. I take that back, actually. It was a big game for all of us.
It was a big game, yeah.
It is a big old place. We're talking about little kind of intangibles here, but it is interesting that Wembley has seen the fewest goals so far.
Well, Gregor, you know, that may have a little something to do with England's approach, particularly earlier on in this competition, but the less said about that, the better, because they're into the semi-final. So up next, we'll discuss England's game with Denmark on Wednesday night. Stay with us on The Game.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, once the game at Wembley on Tuesday night between Spain and Italy is done with, there's work for the groundsman to do, because it's a pretty quick turnaround for the game between England, hosts of course, against Denmark, the number 10 side in the world, who have grown and grown into this tournament. In fact, you could say the same about England as well. We're slightly biased on The Game podcast, so we're going to catch up with the England camp. Paul Joyce has been following the team throughout the competition. I asked him a little bit earlier on what the mood is like in the camp right now.
Calm, excited, confident. I think there's a real belief in the squad at the moment. I think the fact that you mentioned there about the semi-final of the World Cup, and obviously that ended in defeat, but I think that almost gives them a bit more sort of belief, because they've been through that process once before. They feel they're in a better position than 3 years ago, both in terms of sort of they've experienced more things since then. And I think there's a feeling within the squad that there's greater depth of resources than there was 3 years ago. So, yeah, it's a very confident squad, while at the same time always projecting that it's going to be a difficult game against Denmark, who they've faced already twice this season and failed to score a goal against.
What was the mood today? I know Harry Maguire spoke to the media as well. In terms of the players keeping a level head, he's had a great couple of games as well, looks more confident than ever. You know, do you think he's going to carry that into the game against Denmark?
There's almost so much focus on the England captain at these tournaments and whenever England play. But I think what we've seen as the tournament's progressed is Jordan Pickford develop into a leader. Raheem Sterling definitely develop into a leader. Harry Maguire, since he came back from injury, develop into a leader. Even Luke Shaw, somebody who's only got 14 caps, develop into a leader. So, yeah, I think Harry Maguire sort of feels like a bit of a talisman for England at the moment. Just so secure, brings a sense of calm to the defending. And I think because of what's happened to Harry Maguire this season, and because of the injury that he had coming into the tournament, there's been a lot of focus on him. Obviously, he missed the Europa League final with Manchester United. He spoke today about being sent off against Denmark when the teams last met at Wembley, which was back in October, and he was going through a difficult period in terms of his form at that time. So he's drawn a lot of focus, but I think John Stones alongside him has had an exceptional tournament. You know, was out of the England squad for a long time when he wasn't playing for Manchester City. He's come in since March and really picked up where he left off. So there's a nice blend at the moment of the core players from 2018, Pickford, Stones, Maguire, Kyle Walker, Kane, Sterling, Henderson. And then you've got these other maybe younger players, talented players, Mason Mount, Luke Shaw, take your pick on the right side, Saka, Foden, Sancho and Calvin Phillips and Rice, of course, as well. So I think that's something that Harry Maguire stressed. The squad feels better prepared because it's got a really good balance of experience and the fearlessness of youth at the moment.
Just finally, I think spirit is a massive thing in international competition. I know the manager, Gareth Southgate, has spoken about the closeness of the squad, the players talking about one another in really great, you know, friendly terms as well. You know, we mentioned it a few days ago on the podcast, but do you think the fact that there's no two-horse race anymore in the Premier League? You know, lots of these players are from clubs spread across the top division. But also, of course, you know, even the race for the title is every year it seems to be two different teams. There's no real, you know, it used to be Manchester United and Chelsea for a period, and Manchester United and Arsenal during years where England really under-delivered. What do you think the key ingredient is in this England squad of that harmony?
No, I think that's a very good point. I'd not really thought of that, but I think that's a very good point that you raised. There isn't really the sort of maybe entrenched club rivalries that we saw maybe in the early sort of 2000s with the Liverpool and Manchester United players. I think the secret of the harmony undoubtedly comes from the manager, though, because he's cultivated this environment. He's put the culture in place where it's about everyone. It's about the 26 or the 23, as it would normally be. It's not about one or two players. I think he's been the breadth of clubs that he's taken, he's been prepared to pick players from West Ham or Leeds, you know, Southampton. You know, there's various examples of players who've come from the less established, less perceived elite. I think Southgate deserves a lot of credit for how he's cultivated the group, really. I think England are benefiting from the continuity that his appointment brought. He knew a lot of these players from the under-21s. And I know they stumbled across him, really, because of what happened with Sam Allardyce. And he didn't really want the job at first when Roy Hodgson left it after the end of Euro 2016. But the FA have almost sort of hit upon this sort of formula by accident, but it's certainly one that's got England sort of becoming everything that every England fan has always wanted the squad to be, and they're in a very sort of good place going into this massive week now. And no complacency, but just confidence and belief is what you sort of detect around the camp, really.
Paul Joyce, thank you very much. And we will look forward to that game between England and Denmark. Most of us England fans with real hope. We'll discuss it on tomorrow's episode of The Game. But remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast from. And of course, make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times. There will be great journalism today looking ahead to that game. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/The Game to begin your free trial. We'll see you very soon.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.